my biggest driving point, and I'll say this over and over and over again, is if you, there's something special about playing in front of the people who brought you to where you are. And I never got to do that. And Lindsay talks about it a lot. Mal talks about it. Any pro player will talk about playing in front of their friends and family, their club coaches, their high school coaches, their friends from high school. I didn't get to experience that. And I think everybody I've talked to, the fact that spark goes off in their mind. Wow, I get to play in front of my family. I get to invite everybody I know to come and watch me play. That is my why. And that's why I'm driven to do this. I didn't get to experience that. And I don't want that to go. I don't want any other players to have to not get that opportunity.
I just felt like it was a little bit of a kick in the balls, to be honest.
It came a lot sooner than I thought that I would be the oldest player on the team.
That's all you got, brother. That's all you got.
The word of the day would have been hyper-realism.
We're bad at soccer, but we're good on a bagel.
Boarding the high line with Rabbi in red, talking the rabbits and turning heads, with questions from you and analysis, in your car, in your home, thank you for tuning to Holding the High Line.
Hello, four Denver FC fans. You are listening to Rapids Roommates with Rabbi and former roommate Brendan Plone. My name is Matt Pollard. This is actually Holding the High Line. Friday nights are difficult for Mark. We're going to podcast next week talking Rapids stuff, but obviously big, big news in the WOSO front and in the Denver soccer front. So we wanted to dedicate an episode to that. So bringing back former contributor to the Denver Post, my former roommate and current Burgundy Wave NWSL WOSO correspondent, Brendan Plone, Denver, Colorado, will be the 16th franchise in the National Women's Soccer League.
Unreal, Matt. Denver is a soccer city. It's been said again and again, but to see it finally come to fruition from such an organic place, the way that it started two and a half years ago to where we are now, it is truly an amazing day for soccer and the sport. It's definitely a watershed moment.
No, absolutely. And I think I know you weren't here physically for it as well, Brendan, but you know, just the vibes being at all the various events that they had yesterday at time of recording, there would have been the NWSL press conference in the morning. There would have been the event at number 38 for the media in the afternoon, and then in the evening, more of a happy hour get together and everything. And it was absolutely packed. Brendan, do we have an updated number from the comms person?
So I reached out again later this afternoon. So for reference, if you've not heard, Jordan Angeli announced yesterday during the afternoon presser that as of 3 Mountain Time, they over 2,000 season ticket member deposits, which is insane.
And listeners, they're doing deposits based on the number of seats that you want. So that's not 2,000 deposits. That is 2,000. Like, this is how many seats I want already, to be clear. And if you want more information on that, they do already have a website up. This is DenverNWSL.com. And you can go to tickets. And I'm going there right now, Brendan, and it appears to still be available. And so for $30.30, you can put down a general deposit for season tickets, and it's $100 for premium. Not entirely sure what that means, but in any case, season ticket member deposits are still available at time of recording if you have not given them your $30.30, which is, I don't know what at this point, Brendan, 2 beers at Dick's?
Pretty much. I mean, yeah, we haven't gotten the full day one totals. That's really the big number that I'm looking for, but as soon as we get it, we'll definitely tweet it out on our social media channels, because it's going to be a big number. And the way that energy really exuberated, even from the morning press conference, which was with just media, whoever wanted to be on it at a national level, it was the commissioner and Rob Cohen. The way that they presented themselves and just really pitched the idea that this is here, this is not going away, there's a record amount of dollars behind this, and it's only getting started. Those vibes were high all day. And then, Matt, obviously you were there at the evening session. And in the middle, you know, there was the local media stuff, which became formalized. And as our photographer extraordinaire, John Babiak, noted in his timestamps, it became official at 2:22 p.m. on January 30th, 2025. Denver got an NWSL team.
I don't know if that's official, if that's a thing that they were doing with that. There's been a few numbers in here that I think we could have some fun with here, Brendan. So we got 2:22, so we like the consistency here. I am curious why the season ticket deposit is $30.30. I suppose you could be doing the 303 one. But I mean, you know, Brendan, if they had done $52.80, like, I don't think that they're getting... I don't think that number, the number that we got at the time, it was 2000. If you secretly were making it, you know, what, $22.30 and $0.50 more, I don't think that number's under 1500, for example. Uh-uh. Like, I was talking to a lot of people. I asked some Rapid season ticket members, like, if I told you the deposit was $100 or less, like, are you questioning? He's like, no, like, anything less than that, like, here, like, shut up and take my money. Like, I want to bookmark this already. So I think it speaks to the groundswell movement as well. I also want to say, Brendan, the number of Rapids people that I saw there, but also the number of youth soccer people that I saw there as well in the front. I think this has an opportunity to absolutely blow up when it comes to the women's game, or just the girls playing in AYSO or in an organized academy or in a high school program somewhere in the front range to get really, really big. At one point, I was sharing a beer with Eric Boucher, our good friend who is coaching Colorado Rapids too. And Eric Boucher is from Colorado Rush, and he ran into one or two Rush people who he has who are still coaching, or I'm not sure on their role, but they're doing something at Rush specifically with the women's game. And like their half of their girls team that they were responsible for was here as well. And to have that be, you know, 5 to 8 p.m. downtown on a school night in, you know, late January, where the weather's kind of bitter and the roads are still a little bit icy, I think speaks to the interest. To I don't know how much you got to gauge from the photos that we saw as well, Brendan, the number of media that were there. We were someone, I will not say who, was making the joke of, you know, when the number of media that looked like the only time they had seen something like that from a Rapid standpoint is usually when they're when they have the new big press conference for the new head coach, and they have like all of the admin and all of the staff there to kind of fill the room and make it look like it's important. But it's just the same one row of five or six people on No One Good FC asking any questions. Now there's other important business people who are there as well. But like the photos that you saw from that, listeners, like that was 20 to 30 members of media. Now, granted, there were some general ones. There were a lot of TV cameras. So, you know, your Denver Sevens, Kyle Clark was not there to my knowledge, unfortunately, though I'd love to see him there. Jake Shapiro and his partner who were doing, I know Jake's still doing the radio stuff. And I think his partner is with the magazine.
Westward. Yep.
Westward. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Jake, if you're listening, I apologize for not remembering your.
He's at 104.3 The Fan.
104.3 The
Fan. Crushing it there. So
yes, but
yes, every single TV station in town was there. Both major newspapers that were there, the Gazette and the Post. Westward, like.
Yeah, and so a lot of new media, packed. a lot of yes. Digital stuff, a lot of other magazine stuff. So you think the traditional, the old school ones that you have, Brendan, newspapers and then local TV channels. And then it was, you know, spread the gamut as well. And then even down to the soccer bloggers like you and me. So I am really curious to see here as well, Brendan, like what is the makeup of what this club is able to have from an audience and a fan capture standpoint? And what does it look like from a media standpoint? Just because, and I'll feed this to you then, Brendan. What do we think that that's going to look like vis-a-vis the Rapids, given that there's some potential collaboration, but also there eventually there'll be some competition? And all of this knowing, this is an organization that officially has no interaction, no relationship, no partnership with KSE.
Correct.
Which fork in the road do you want to take right now, Brendan?
The fact that I can just envision when the NWSL plays in summer, and if the Rockies are having a rough season and it's a Saturday, probably two or three stations would probably go to the NWSL game, because the idea is that the stadium will be in a neighborhood in Denver County and hopefully the city of Denver itself. So for people to get there a lot easier from even just from the station's point of view. It'll be fascinating to see how the media grows out of this, because Anna Bussell has a very broad spectrum of journalists, and it's amazing. And so much of it is organic, and just
way more organic than vibes, I would argue.
Yeah, good vibes. So like, that's going to be fascinating to see how that plays out as well. But anyways, let's get back to the good stuff. The media side, you know, that's for the next year to sort out, to sift out. What should fans know about who's in this ownership group?
So obviously we have Jordan Angeli, former Colorado Rush legend. I would argue Boston Breakers legend as well, Brendan, if you remember that awesome golazo that she scored back in the day. I can't even remember WPSL. I don't remember the name of that league.
That it was WPS.
WPS. Yeah. Okay, let's go. Rest in peace, WPS. So she's involved in it, but the main owner. So if the question here, listeners, is who's the guy who wrote the majority of the reported $110 million expansion fee check? That is Rob Cohen. He is from IMA Financial Group. That is an insurance entity. We also have the siblings from First Track Ventures who have some ski connections as well. And then I don't remember which member of the Coors family, but we have some Coors Brewing connections as well here, Brendan. So I would argue
Molly Coors. Here we've got here. Let's just read out some names. Yeah. Let's see here. The cash put up by Cohen and Project Level, in addition to First Track owner Sports Venture, Nilima Joshi, Dieran Javeri, and Molly Coors, in addition to the alternate governor, Melody Hobson, who she's the CEO and president of Ariel Investments. And then they also have Jason Wright, who's the former president of the Washington Commanders in this group as well. So it's a very large group, but the element of it being organic really came from Jordan Angeli in the summer of 2023, is just a reminder. Tom Dunmore, who was in the 11, Ben Hubbard, who was a CEO of an insurance company, who kind of really was the guy to connect all these people together and bring them together. And then Nicole Glaros, who's of Techstars, which is a Boulder entrepreneur company, and they're apparently, she's been super super important for that, for Denver FC group to get them up and ready to go into the next step of investment, which is when all these other people came in, including Rob Cohen. So that's who is leading the charge, and will be ultimately in charge of putting together this team.
So I think a few things here, Brendan. I do want to point out, we have a very diverse ownership group. Like, if you're looking structure-wise here, listeners, like, this is closer to what the Avengers cast that Natalie Portman assembled for Angel City FC.
And same, I would say the same length, wavelength.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
And really, really similar as well to, you know, the LAFC basically has like a starting 11 of celebrity owners here. I will say as well, Brendan, these are a lot of business people, but they're business people with diverse backgrounds. I remember when we had Ben and Jordan on this podcast 18 months ago now, Brendan, one of the questions that I asked Ben was about the logistics, or how much the business side stuff that he had built up, what connections there were. And okay, he's not doing any, like, logistics is important for running a sports team that is not necessarily on the field standpoint. So I think it's a really good question, given the diversity of group you have here. Who all is going to be the most involved, and how is that involvement going to be hands-on day-to-day stuff versus come to me with big picture, high level problems, and then me writing checks. So who is the, who's Charlie Metvin, and then who is Stuart Donald, who I guess used the old season 2 of Sunderland Till I Die. And hopefully nobody comes up with some cringy walkout music to make it seem like we're in a club kind of a situation. So that's something that I'm really interested in. I think the other thing as well, Brendan, that I think is important is the amount of people who have roots in Colorado, not just Jordan Angeli. So to the extent that this is a grassroots movement or a I'm here for Colorado because I'm from Colorado, I can see where there are times that Rapids fans have felt KSC being a little bit spread out geographically. The fact that the Cronkies are originally from the, you know, the outside St. Louis to, why can't I remember where Mizzou is? Springfield?
Columbia.
Thank you, Brandon. So many Mizzou listeners that we have. Connor Cape is so upset at me right now, and rightfully so.
Como.
Yeah, but so I think it speaks to, you're from Colorado, you made your money in Colorado, your business in Colorado, like bring the team to Colorado, as opposed to being this detached billionaire or 100 millionaire owner that is maybe a little bit removed from the day-to-day and doesn't feel like it's theirs and doesn't have the day-to-day tender love and care. And I'm not saying that any one of these people is going to do that, but I mean, like, we've got people who made their money in the ski industry here, Brendan. We have we'll break this point now. On some level, listeners, I think there's an argument to, as an adult, you become the adult or the hero that could have saved the childhood version of you. One of the impetus of holding the High Line at its core origin. Happy 7th birthday to HTHL, by the way. We are 7 years and one day old now. But Mark and I thought about it. We wanted to do a podcast because we were like, this is a podcast that should exist. Let's create the podcast about the Rapids that we would want to listen to. And I think at some point, if we were to peel back the Freudian sublayers of Jordan Angeli's conscious here, there is a little 7-year-old version of Jordan playing AYSO or a 13, 14-year-old playing U15s with Colorado Rush right now, who is like, I'm doing this for that version of me. And I'm doing this because I know I show up to this kind of event and I'm taking a bunch of photos with a bunch of little girls. And one of those, I'd almost bet money at this point, Brendan, there was a little girl at the event last night who will eventually play for this team. I would almost bet money on it right now.
Same.
And so on some level, this dream has been realized and Jordan's doing it for the version of her that was older, the women's game had not been fully developed out, and this club didn't exist. She was doing it for her younger self, and in doing so, she is doing it for a generation of young women and future young women who will play this game in the Front Range of Colorado, in Denver County, to be on this team, play for this team, play for the women's national team, win our 14th World Cup, or what have you. But the two big questions I have about ownership front, Brendan, are not the competency or the collective like brain trust intelligence of it, but
this seems like a brilliant
group. Who's the most hands-on here? Who's just writing checks necessarily? When there is a disagreement or discussion about what decisions to be made, how much of that is deliberative internally, or the fact that, you know, Rob Cohen is probably the one writing the biggest check? If we were to, I haven't looked on the Forbes rating to see what all of these people's net worth is. He's probably the one with the most net worth. Like, where's the percentage majority in here? I'm wondering, what does that mean for the club financially when it comes to a stadium, when it comes to a training ground? Chelsea Women just paid $1.1 million for Naomi Girma. If we're talking about Brendan in a year's time, this team trying to buy Lindsay Horan, trying to buy Sophia Smith, trying to buy, I don't know, Otta Hegerberger, something like that. How is that being discussed, and both on the financial side and who's making decision front? And on that as well, Brendan, I'm kind of curious, like, Jordan was kind of the kahu of the movement of let's get the expansion team going. I feel pretty confident Jordan, between what she made as a soccer player and what she's made in a media person, Brendan, like, she didn't write a lot of that $100 million check, but where's her role in this? I think the ideal situation for me, and forgive me, listeners, as a Dodgers fan, I think is to have her almost as the Magic Johnson of the Los Angeles Dodgers equivalent, to where she's not the one writing the checks, but she's the emotional figurehead of it. And she's the one who's the on the ground hearing things, then bringing it back and then convincing the initial ideas of here's where we could go, here's what this would mean financially. And then not saying like mother may I in terms of handing out your hand, but I still want Jordan to be front and center in terms of the emotional front of this. So I don't know if chairman, I don't know if president, I don't know if like, what role does Matthew McConaughey have at Austin FC? Like the director of vibes, yes. I'd be okay with that being Jordan Angeli's official title going forward.
Oh yeah. Wow. You cooked there, bud. So here's the thing with Cohen, he is obviously front and center, as Matt said. Hobson is the number two, as she's the alternate governor. And she's the one where it's Ariel Investments, which is kind of all the people really underneath the umbrella, so to speak, who we mentioned before. The Coor family, the famous ski family, the other folks, they're all significant minority investors. So I think there's pretty already a pretty clear hierarchy, if you will, but it doesn't mean there will not be an insignificant amount of collaboration between all of them. This is going to be a huge effort. And then when you think about it, that's just the ownership group. Today, it was one of the first things Cohen said yesterday in the first media availability is that they start for a general manager begins today, Friday. Mm-hmm. So they still have to build out the entire tree of the organization. And while this is probably where everybody being in a super business world comes together, because they probably all have very different experiences of being at different organizations with different levels of management and who works best, is it, and how it works and everything together. Like, the way that they do this is going to be important. And also, frankly, the way that they look across the NWSL at some of the new teams. If you look at some potential issues with San Diego Wave and even Angel City, and like, you know, just like the ebbs and flows of unfortunate, just like bad stuff that have happened so mm-hmm. far with some of these initial hires. I mean, it's very, very small, to be clear. But like, there's already some, you got to get it right. And with a group this large, they already see that what's going on elsewhere. And also what has gone on from a brand strategy, from a crest design, from a color strategy. They're thinking about the 1,000-foot view from, you know, way up in the clouds when they're, you know, flying, all the way to, you know, the mini pebble level, where who can we have that we thought was a great brand ambassador with for Denver FC that we want to bring on as a potential ticket manager, you know, like they're thinking about all this stuff.
Yeah. So, you know, I have to imagine with whether it's the media stuff for her playing career as well, Brendan, that like Jordan's got a lot of numbers in the Rolodex in her phone that she could call up for a second opinion. Certainly. I have heard a couple of things on the brand front and everything, Brendan. I think certainly from a high level, not necessarily a what we want to do technically or on the field. Certainly this ownership group, I've heard from multiple people, said the club that they see that they kind of want to model what they're trying to be at is absolutely Kansas City Current. And for those of you who haven't paid attention to KC Current, connections to Sporting Kansas City, but not an official affiliation. They have their own, I don't know if it's technically downtown with Kansas City. It's a stadium on the river. I think it's 11,500 in capacity, I think is what we looked up the other night, Brendan, when we were talking. Absolutely crushing it. Patrick Mahomes, I think, is a minority owner as well. And just the vibe, the energy, the branding, the stadium, the way that they've created their own culture that I think is built on what Sporting Kansas City did, but isn't just one-to-one necessarily. So I don't know that, you know, I think there's certainly the family with probably the family with three girls and no boys probably is maybe more interested in going to a women's game than a men's game. The fact that they're going to be in Denver proper eventually once they launch their stadium is certainly good. Not having the scourge of KSE or the 25 years of, let's say, it overall mediocrity and one championship that the Colorado Rapids have had. And if you couple that up with, Brendan, I would argue if Lindsey Horan is any one of the three Colorado starters for the women's national team right now, like if they're on this team when they launch next year and they're the captain, like I think there's an argument that outside of maybe Tim Howard, and I'm not convinced that Tim Howard's a yes on this one, that they're probably they're a bigger brand or a bigger pull from a soccer athlete standpoint in Denver than any Rapids player ever. And that might be including the former Secretary of Defense. Yeah. And so you combine all of that, like there's so much opportunity for them to compound on this in a good way. And the fact that they're looking, I think, in the right areas, certainly, And there's plenty of examples of how to and how not to run your NWSL club. So, I mean, the bar that the Portland Torrens have sent, at least from an HR standpoint in their history, is not very high and is Portland. Very, very easy to clear. I want to talk about another thing.
Not Angel City, I was thinking of earlier. Jeez, yeah.
Yeah.
The league, this league has been through a lot. If you're very new to this, there's a lot of stuff to catch up on because
vet your white men you interview as a head coach is the simplest thing that I can put. Let's talk about happy things here, Brendan.
Please.
Let's talk about branding. Let's talk about color scheme because Brendan, I re-listened to that interview that you and I had with Jordan, and you'll remember it was kind of a black with like a floral pink and then some other stuff. There's a lot going on in the color scheme for the branding when they launched just for Denver FC in 2023, and I asked Jordan whether or not like that was a signal to what they were going for from a branding standpoint, from a color standpoint. Do you remember what Jordan said, Brendan?
She wanted green.
Green's her favorite color. And then here we have the website with the NWSL logo made up with green and white. I should say, Brendan, this is very, very similar. Yeah. It might literally be the Colorado license plate. Or if you think about the alternate Rockies jerseys that they have with the green and white right now, Brendan, I'm totally cool with this literally being like, take the Rockies jersey that they had for that and then like soccer kit-ify that and they would absolutely crush.
Whatever the color that you see of an evergreen when you hike in summer at peak, like fullness and lushness, that is the color that I would describe it as.
Yeah.
Also to what we heard earlier as well. Shout out to SoccerWise, David Goss. He talked to Jordan on their podcast and. Jordan was saying that they brought back the same brand design company, which is Wonderworks. And the people who designed the For Denver FC crest, that was Wonderworks, I believe. And
I believe so.
Oh, and then, of course, the PR team, which is Skylark Media. And that's Brendan Hannon, who's a Denver native, and he's done a lot of stuff with LA Galaxy. And
shout out to Brendan Hannon, Brendan Hannon. Brendan H was the communications director. I'm not sure on the role specifically, the equivalent to Emilio Gonzalez for the Rapids right now. When I would have had the pool reporter question after the win over against Zlatan's LA Galaxy. You remember that game, Brendan? There was the red card to Christian Pavone that got called back. Shin Yashiki scored the winner. And then there was a potential penalty. And I submitted a pool reporter question. And instead of just getting the written response, Fotis Bazakos decided to come out and just talk to me for 5 minutes. And Brendan was standing there. And that's how I originally met him. And Fotis Bazakos basically argued that Ralph Felcher headbutted Danny Wilson's leg. Danny won the ball technically as well. He did point that out. So yeah, shout out to Brendan. He's been absolutely fantastic. And we look forward to interacting and working with him. Salt of the earth human being, just like what the Rapids comms team has built for the last couple of years. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
Oh, no, it's all good. So the let's see here. So the For Denver FC logo, that was designed by Wonderworks. We heard through David Goss's podcast, SoccerWise, that they've been retained for I think a large element of designing the crest and stuff, if I recall hearing that correctly. David, apologies if I got that wrong, but that sounded what I thought I heard, but they've been a huge part of the brand element. So they've got that part down. They're a local agency. They've done lots of stuff before and, we'll see. But yeah, just from a brand element already, like I'd say it's a lot better than team number 15 out east in Boston.
Yes, please, Jordan, if you're listening to this, like, please don't name this team like Denver Nation or Colorado Nation or something like that. Den Nation, I suppose. I'm really curious to see where they go in terms of the actual naming here. Brendan, I do think I don't know that there's a lawsuit potential, but I think there's a lot of confusion potentially between FC Denver and going Denver FC. And I also think they definitely want to play into more being Colorado's team, not just necessarily Denver's team. And I think given everything, like they have to have some kind of nature theme. So if we talk about, you know, the football team, we have the Broncos. If you talk about the two main, all the main state colleges, you know, we've got Buffaloes, we've got Rams, we've got the Tigers, Colorado College, or are they Panthers? Yep. Okay, maybe that doesn't count. Denver Pioneers as well, Colorado Rapids. So I think we definitely have to have a nature theme.
Down in Durango, don't forget the Skyhawks.
Skyhawks. Apologies to the Durango Skyhawks.
Fort Lewis College.
Yes. So you have to have an I think for them to just be like, they should not just be like generic soccer name, or if not, like there needs to be some other outdoorsy nickname associated with it. I think that would be aligned with them. I would love to see like some kind of ski connection with this as well, Brendan, given their ownership group as well. Like the say what you will about the PR that Vail Resorts has had recently, but like the fact that, you know, it took to getting UC Health, which was the one big player that you had from a sponsorship standpoint in the state, from the Rapids to be connected. Like, how have the Rapids never had Coors Brewing or Illegal Pete's or Vail Resorts or like one of those like specifically very Colorado companies or Colorado based companies based there? Heck, Chipotle as well, since they're originally from Denver as well. So I think this team, this organization has a chance to learn from a lot of the mistakes and successes of other NWSL launches, a lot of successes of what other sports teams, professional and college, have done in the community here. And really kind of also, not to turn this into a dig at the Rapids as well here, Brendan, but like they also learn from all the things that the Rapids haven't been able to do to capture in on the soccer market to where they're still working on their relevance. So we'll see what happens there.
30 years, right? They've been around for 30 years. There's a lot to... 1996.
Yeah. Well, we'll be 30 next year. It might be 30 next year. We might be 30 years from when the franchise from when the franchise was actually awarded to Mr. Anschutz here. I believe that happened in 1995, if I'm not mistaken. First half, April, yeah. May, not sure. Let's talk stadium as well, Brendan. So Brendan, yeah. I'm going to also heard from a little birdie. A couple of my sources were at the event yesterday as well, listeners. So sometimes I hear things. So another thing here, Brendan, I still have not heard, and I will ask Jordan this when we have her for the podcast, just to confirm this, but everything that I have heard on the record, off the record, for Denver FC and Colorado Rapids were open to having an interaction if the other one wanted to come to the table. Neither of them did. And as far as I know, there is no business, there is no connection whatsoever, regardless of Jordan's role in a media capacity for the Rapids on match day and with the stuff that they're putting on Apple TV as well. Like, functionally, there is no partnership. KSC obviously isn't in the ownership group in any capacity whatsoever. And one of the tidbits as well, Brendan, to where I think we can officially rule out the team playing at Dick's Sporting Goods Park. Yes. They've been looking at a few different venues. I had heard initially, this would have been over a year ago now, Brendan, that they were interested in Infinity Park, which is a 5,000-seater rugby stadium that is in Glendale, might be Littleton, in the south. It's Glendale. So they were looking at that. I think what they're going to do, Brendan, before they actually make an announcement, they want to see what they get in terms of season ticket on the rules, because like if they absolutely blow up, I'm not saying that they have 2,000, you know, within 12 hours is really, really good. But, you know, I think a 5,000 seater would be a really good soft launch. But let's say they absolutely blow it up. And let's say they get an amazing head coach, Brendan. Let's say they get Lindsey Horan and Sophia Smith as well. I had heard that there were initial conversations with KSC, and Kroenke was willing to let them use Dick's as a secondary tenant, so not conflicting with any Rapids games. Rapids games get priority. We already know NWSL and MLS in similar markets. You know, it's normally the MLS team
Seattle,
is playing
Portland
7:30 on Saturday, yeah. And then the NWSL team's playing Saturday afternoon, maybe a Saturday like early 5 p.m. kickoff at the latest on the Sunday, especially in a school night.
Seattle, Portland, LA. It's
Orlando. I guess Louisville kind of counts with the USL. Kinda.
Yep.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Any case. So I had heard KSC was open to them using Dick's, and they were going to charge the same amount per game to rent the stadium as Mile High is willing to make available to the team. And so if you have a choice between Mile High, especially if you can fill that lower bowl, versus whatever you're going to get at Dick's going out to Commerce City, I think we know what generally you would prefer. I wasn't able to confirm this. I did hear from, I heard that tidbit from a few different people. From one person, I heard that it was 60,000 per game, which, you know, I feel like if you're doing that, how long is the NWSL season, Brendan?
From,
how many games?
March till, oh gosh, shoot.
How many home games is for Denver FC getting in year one?
I think, is it 12? Hold on, sorry. 13. So it's a 26 game regular season, 13 home, 13 away.
Okay, so $780K that you're paying in rent as well. So what, like Jack Price's salary when he was when he didn't have an Achilles tear? So, I mean, having that, if you're getting Mile High and if you're selling it out, and I texted, I have a friend who works for the Broncos, Brent. I was trying to figure this out. What's the lower bowl of the horseshoe if you just wanted to minimize that? And they weren't able to get an answer to me. I know it's like 76,000 is the total seated capacity. And I know the end zone stands, so the south end of the bowl that's not a part of the actual horseshoe, that's 18,000. So take away that 18,000, we're like just under 60K. So let's call it 20K, Brennan. So, I mean, if they get, let's say they get to 10,000 season ticket deposits as well. Like, if you're getting that, and then with the, like, if you could pack or mostly pack the lower bowl, I think that's been, like, the bare minimum that, like, MLS teams that are opening in NFL stadiums have wanted. Like, a Sounders game on a Wednesday night, and the weather's great. Like, they'll still get 30K, and they'll get 40K on the weekend, and that's enough to make being at the Clink worthwhile as well. Charlotte's done a good job with that. You know, Atlanta regularly has, I think they normally in the entire time of them being at the Benz, they've had the upper, the 100s and the 200s level open. But if you're talking, you know, if we're talking the lower bowl of the horseshoe, Brendan, that being open, like that's a solid, you know, that's slightly less than what the Rapids were probably getting for 4th of July, where tickets were $10 back in 2004. So
yeah,
I think that they're probably going to be there.
We know game one, whenever they kick off, if hopefully it is 2026, because this thing is coming fast.
Yeah.
Game one, listen.
They could sell out Mile High.
It'll be sold out Mile High. There's no other place they'd want it. Yeah. There's just so much momentum behind this. You guys all know. You saw it. You probably were more emotional than I was, and I was, like, blown away by it. Like, there's such a groundswell that is happening that the whole Denver sporting landscape changed in an instant.
Yeah.
We got to remember, there was zero. This was the largest American city without a women's professional soccer team or women's professional sports team, period.
And this now is an NWSL ownership group that tried to bring the WNBA to Denver and failed.
But like, they're ambitious as heck. So, you know, they're going to be, you know, going guns a-blazing for Mile High, sold out game number one. So probably in a snow classical, considering when the NWSL starts.
I'd like some nice weather here, Brendan. I think they're at Mile High, but we'll see what they'll do. We don't have information on the permanent stadium. Brendan, I am just going to run down. I went back through my notes from my off the record notebook. And so I'm just going to run down here every single like possible stadium location that I have heard, regardless of like here's the entire scope of what I know to be the possible places they have looked in the past, they have thought about in the past, they are looking at right now in no particular order.
Just stadium or training options too?
Well, I think, Brendan, I think you and I, everybody who said that they've heard something has been there looking at the south, and it's going to be either next to the Broncos facility or when the Broncos actually move, they're going to be taking over, what is it, Dove something? Dove Tree?
Dove Creek.
Dove Valley?
Where the Broncos practice.
Dove Valley.
Dove Valley. That is from a couple different sources is what I have heard. They're looking around that area. Now, granted, we cannot confirm it as of yet at all, but this was, you know, last year, and those, as far as we know, those discussions were still ongoing. We haven't heard anything since, like, off the record, really, even. So, like, to be clear, this is not a full-blown, it's going to happen, but what we generally know is that the South suburbs are number one, the hotbed for where all the pros come out. If you think about it, Highlands Ranch, Littleton, Centennial, boom, boom, boom. They're all, so many pros have come out of that area. Rail Colorado is based over there. Rush is based over there. Like, it is, the South suburbs make sense from a women's soccer perspective.
Brendan, I'll just say that. If you were to just put together like South Denver all-time starting 11, just college soccer as well. Like, I bet that we could put, I bet you could assemble a South Denver all-time NCAA women's best 11 that would beat the equivalent state 11s for like 40 to 45. Like I think the, yes. like an all California and all Los Angeles ones beating that, probably Texas, that one area in New Jersey where not Lindsey Horan, who am I thinking of? I can't remember. New Jersey beats it, but like the,
if oh, we were to, yes.
You know what I'm talking about.
Yes. What's your
but
face?
So like, Brendan, if we were to say.
Carly Lloyd.
Thank you. And then I know Tony Meola and I think Eric yes. Winaldo were like born down the street from each other or something like that. But like, Brendan, if we were to say, get me the best 11 of every single women college soccer player who was born and grew up in the state of Illinois, I bet you the South Denver suburb team beats that Illinois team.
I'm thinking of the North Shore and or the Western suburbs. So
anyways, but my point is it's a hotbed for soccer. And so having the training facility, maybe an academy facility, maybe some partnerships with Rush, Real Colorado, et cetera, having that set up, I think absolutely like that you've got a straight pipeline to creating homegrowns that are going to be as good, if not better, than Sam Vines, Cole Bassett, et cetera, as well.
Hold on. Also, wait. Stop there, because we got to remember, this is not MLS. Homegrowns aren't a thing.
Okay.
Academies aren't a thing. In the
maybe there should be. I think they should be.
They got rid of the draft.
Okay.
I will say, if I'm looking at a potential roster next year, who's the best Coloradan that stayed in college soccer this year, and I already have a feeling who we know who it will be. I've got a gut feeling who it could be. I think it would be Nikki Frazier.
Okay.
Already U.S. under 21's team. It's going to be a sophomore.
That's Robin's youngest daughter, by the way, for those like, who didn't connect those.
Defender, notes. Super tall, already like a first team all Big Ten her freshman year. Like, yeah.
Literally her dad.
Yeah, and also very, very kind. Anywho, we're ranting.
I want to go back to Dove Valley really quickly here, Brendan. I'm looking at it on Google Maps. So I am looking at the intersection of East Broncos Parkway and South Potomac Street. This is due east, maybe about a mile from the old Centennial Airport. And so in the northwest corner, you've got the full Broncos complex. That would be more than big enough for a soccer training facility. It looks like you've got some
train there before. Yeah.
Yes. We've got a Denver Racing Social Club as well. There's a dog park in the area. And if I just look like catty corner, like there is open land space as well. I don't know who owns this land. I don't know if it's refuge. I don't know if it's like wetlands, what that situation is going on. But catty corner from the Broncos facility are two open soccer pitches, Dove Valley Regional Park. I don't know who owns this, but to say, listeners, like this is a pretty open space that has a lot of potential for development. This looks like a very viable opportunity for the practice facility. So, Brendan, here's everything I've heard about what they could do in terms of an actual stadium location. I've heard
purpose-built stadium. Yeah,
purpose-built women's soccer-specific stadium. To be clear,
boom.
I've heard the area in Glovial near the RTD stop that is at 41st and Fox. We've heard Rhino. There's some redevelopment area that could be going on there. We've heard areas around the Denver Sox Show, Denver Coliseum. I've heard that taking over some of the parking spaces. I've heard that knocking down potentially the Denver Coliseum, though that's the least likely option. I know, Brendan, you had reported that they had kind of gone away from that option. Well, and then the more
they went away from the Stock Show for sure.
Yes. And then the more recent one that has come up as well, Brendan, which is actually my path that I would have taken to Rabbi's house during year one of holding the High Line, is the intersection between I-25 and South Broadway. There's a couple old warehouse industrial stuff as well. There's some rail yard space that could be moving. And that whole intersection with where that RTD stop, listeners, just has a bunch of commuter parking and like dirt lots that are just not being used as well, that I'm sure could be paved over, turned into a parking garage, turned into a stadium, and have plenty of space, albeit a little wonky to get out of if you're not just jumping on I-25. Go ahead.
What else do you have your list? Is that it? Can I provide some context? What we heard actually yesterday? So Mayor Mike Johnston spoke yesterday and specifically about the stadium. And what he emphasized is that walkability and bikeability is front of center. Being in a neighborhood is huge. And maybe he said it might be like a, not necessarily a neighborhood that you necessarily might not think of. Like it certainly won't be Lohi or, you know, the Highlands, anywhere like that. But walkability is going to be huge, and biking, and actually building out the neighborhood in the way that most modern sports franchises do around a stadium, where you got bars, restaurants, and the way you actually want to build out a stadium neighborhood. That is certainly what they're going to do with this new purpose-built women's soccer stadium.
Capacity-wise, Brendan, I think earlier on in this process, I was hearing 8 to 10K, and I've heard more recently that they're targeting between 10 and 15K, which I think is, if they build the stadium in a way to where it has an opportunity for expansion or at least standing room or some other component to it as well. You know, the Rapids ever actually get big, they got that whole north side of the stadium, they could fill in the horseshoe, something like that, I think is appropriate for where they'd be right now, has the possibility for them to expand further from an ambition standpoint, and I think shows better to where NWSL is going. And again, going back to the KC current connection as well, with what KC's done with their existing stadium and their location and everything, is that like the, you cannot get a seat, like you needed season tickets, and then like the market for it on the secondary market isn't, it's not as expensive as like Chiefs playoffs tickets, but like the, there is that much like divide between the actual supply of things and the actual demand of them. So again, it's a hot ticket, there's an atmosphere to it, you know, it's not the same, Brendan, as, you know, there's a part of me that still has my heartbreak, Brendan, that, you know, like it's the middle of the summer, it's a good game on a Saturday night, mm-hmm. the Rockies are crap, the Rapids are doing well, and I look over on the east end of Dick's Sporting Goods Park and I can spell out, I can see what each section is, yes. like letter wise overall.
That always crushed me too.
Yeah. Oh. God. And so, you know, if the, or I remember there was an old, I don't know if they're still active, but I was a regular for that, both covering the Rapids and covering St. Louis FC in the USL Championship. There was a Twitter account run by the same guys, and it was like the, it was like packed crowds, and then it was like the empty seats, and like they were like two like related accounts or whatever. And so, yeah, it was always, you know, it was nice to see them occasionally be like, oh, it's 4th of July, like, you know, full seats, yay, Colorado Rapids, and all the other times just dogging the fact that it's kickoff and people are still streaming in and you can see every single letter very clear. Like, there's no confusion over what's the C and what's the O and what's the D, despite Colorado having a lot of letters that look really, really similar. So I'm hoping it won't be like that. But I think, Brendan, certainly from a reporting standpoint, like, we need to hammer, we need to get updates to the extent that they're willing to give us that, because I want to chart and see where they're going from a season ticket deposit standpoint. And I think that'll be the first real tangible metric for them. Could we be in Mile High full time for our first year and like plausibly sell out the lower bowl? And if they're selling out the lower bowl, Brendan, like that has to be at least 15,000. If you're getting that, then you're selling out the first full year. Like, you could do only season tickets for your first season in the new Soccer Pacific Stadium and not have to worry about there being an empty seat. So super excited about that. I think we covered everything that we had, at least in my notes, Brendan. Let me go back to, again, their website, listeners, Denver NWSL. They're on all the social media platforms here. Let me look. They got to have it on their contact page as well. Let me see. They are sponsorship, follow us. I found this earlier. About, maybe. Wow, Matt, good job. You should have had notes on this. You should have been like more organized or something. FAQs. You can sign up for their email list. I see that. They are mostly on, they have Instagram, they're on YouTube, they're on TikTok, and they are on the Bird app.
And Blue Sky.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Note to self, they're on Blue Sky. And I think that is Denver NWSL across all platforms. I assume that'll be changing once they actually have a team name.
Back to, I guess I just kind of want to end with this point, with what Jordan told us to, you know, 18 months ago now, about how, you know, the way that she, the, her why, you know, we heard that her quote earlier and on the start of the podcast, but her why, the amount of players that like it, that are actively in the league, really, really relate to that. It is insane. I've talked to probably 7 or 8 Coloradans who are in NWSL rosters. all them, every time I would bring up, what do you think about Denver getting a team? They would just, their faces would light up. And it's just like they wanted this so much. And so for those players to come home in 2026, week in, week out, whether they're on the team or not, and have their people there, that's a winner.
I think I told this story. I've told this story to a couple people, Brendan, president of NASR, the North American Soccer Reporters, and my de facto soccer little sister, Rachel Krieger, who's getting married in May, did some short form content for the Equalizer at an NWSL final a number of years ago. And there were a number of other players doing media stuff. I don't remember what year this was, so I don't remember what teams were involved, but like some national teamers were there, some all-star equivalent level players were there. Marta was there, even though Orlando wasn't playing. And so she was going through in the mix zone and just like every single player, it was like a real quick question, like what market do you want to see NWSL expand to? And 70% of them said Denver. So I think the thing that we maybe started with when we talked about this last time, Brendan, you know, 18 months ago, was everybody wants this. Like the league wanted this. The city wanted this. I would argue the Rapids even wanted this. Mm-hmm. The players wanted, the only thing that was really missing was putting together an ownership group that could write a check and show a level of intent financially, emotionally, to then get this thing off the ground. You know, $110 million is nothing to snuff at. It's obviously mm-hmm. a third of what MLS franchises are going with, but there's going to be, a 30-ish million dollar, training facility, or let's say 10, seven figures would be a million. So we'll go there's going to be an 8-figure check to write for a training facility if they're not just moving into Dove Valley and replacing the Broncos logo with a Ford Denver FC logo. And there's going to be an 8 million figure stadium that they're going to build as well. And so that was really the only thing that was kind of missing. They've now assembled that, obviously. And I'm really curious to see how this takes off. Other big question that I'll leave you with, Brendan, that's maybe not fun to think about from a Rapids media context as well, is that how do these two clubs interact with each other? Because again, everything I've heard on and off the record, they're open to collaborating. They're clearly not. And clearly, Ford Denver FC is going to learn from mistakes of the past that the Rapids have had as well. And so thing that I'm really curious about, Brendan, this time, let's say by 4th of July next year, what is Burgundy Wave's content looking wise in terms of social media posting, any podcasts that we're doing? I've had some preliminary conversations about potentially starting a separate podcast to cover Ford Denver FC, not just doing a woman's hit on Holding the High Line with Rabbi and Red Proper. What are our recaps looking like as well? Where is the media interest and the community groundswell standpoint is that? What do those numbers look like? What are the vibes? What do the energies look like? We know very clearly what the Rapids vibe looks like. It has the potential to go really, really poorly very, very quickly early on in the season. And we know KSC isn't changing anytime soon in year 29 of the club's existence. And at what point do they collaborate with each other, maybe do some joint promotion things as well, have, you know, Ford Denver FC night at a Rapids game, have Lindsey Rann or whomever show up? And at what point do we see these competing as well? There's a really good point I heard recently, Brendan. This would have been the Kelsey's podcast, New Heights, and they had on LeBron James, and they were talking about NFL teams playing on Christmas and how their TV ratings did better than some of the NBA games. Granted, I would argue in the context of that lineup for this past Christmas Day, the two biggest games were the Knicks game, which was at the beginning of the day, and then the Lakers game, which was at the end of the night. And the NBA games or the NFL games were in the middle when people were either opening presents, cooking dinner, having dinner, etc. So there's some context there. But like the competition of that, of acknowledging that we're living in an attention economy. And so this isn't just like what you're interested in, where your money's going, but like for a family of four, Brendan, if we're talking about, you know, you're going to show up, not, let's hope, not pay for parking for Ford Denver FC. You're not paying for parking for the Rapids. Maybe you're going to the tailgate. So that's $10 a person. Your tickets are $20 a person. Kid wants Dippin' Dots. You want a beer in the stadium or everything. Like inflation's still a thing. I think inflation's going to be a thing in 2025 and 2026. At some point, fans are going to have to choose where they're spending their money. And so do they double down on going to more soccer? I saw a lot of Rapid season ticket members at the event on Saturday, yesterday. I've heard from a number of Rapid season ticket members who've put down season tickets for both of it. At what point are people choosing one club over another? How much is one team playing on a Sunday afternoon versus playing on a Saturday night potentially conducive to them? How much is the vibe or the energy around the club? How much is the situation with ownership potentially playing into that? Having a star player that's doing well, where the team is in the table, how ambitious the club is in terms of actually winning championships and spending money in their relative to their respective league in order to be competitive in that regard. At what point, what happens, what ways does Denver, does the NWSL coming to Denver help grow the sport on the grassroots level? I think that'll absolutely take off. I think that'll be nothing but positive. Yes. At what point does a rising tide lift all ships, and does that help the Rapids, or is there a point where functionally those two are competing with each other in ways in which the Rapids having a Saturday night game the same night that the Rockies are having Dollar Dog Night or Firework or whatever, they're competing with the Rockies, or the ways in which, Brandon, you and I have both seen, if it's late August, early September, and the Rapid season has gone down the tube, and as soon as the Broncos come on, how the media shifts with that from the greater powers that be as well, or how a decision day for the Rapids in a lame duck game and they've missed the playoffs and they're going the same time as the Broncos and the announced attendance is 12,000 and I'm not sure there's 8,000 butts in seats. I'm not saying I have an answer to that, but there's so much positive around this energy as well, and there's still a number of underlying issues that the Rapids have, and the fact that they've chosen to not collaborate, and there's a lot of little things that I'm seeing and hearing that shows we're going to do stuff differently than the Rapids because they've been doing something for a number of years and it hasn't worked. I'm really curious, at what point do these clubs, are they working together? Are they helping each other? And at what point are they competing with for the hearts, the minds, the attention, and the dollars of people in the soccer community in Denver?
Those are all deep, important questions.
Welcome to Holding the High Line. Welcome to Rapids Room. Brendan, we never, I don't know that we ever talked about this. Brendan, we had an idea when we were roommates to start a podcast.
Let me answer. I'm going to believe in the city of Denver that the rising tides will lift all boats. And while it will absolutely look different depending on the week, depending on the table, depending on all of that. But the fact that there is a choice and they can do both and they can support both. Not every city can say that. Not every shoot, man. Like even here in Chicago, like when you see where both teams ended the year last year, it's a bummer, but like I'm going to believe that Denver will step up in this moment, and the city and the county, and frankly, the state, because it's a state, it is a soccer state. They're going to deliver. That's all I know. But yes, the deep questions are absolutely going to be answered in the next number of months. We've already seen signs of where they might differ from one another. But for now, there's just too much good energy, honestly, to like quash that. So let's just celebrate for just a quick second and then we'll get into those big questions. But at the end of the day, Denver finally has two soccer teams. And that for the longest time, people like Jordan it was her life's mission to make it happen pretty much. And there's probably 20 other players who were pros before Jordan who never had that chance in previous iterations of different women's professional soccer leagues that failed. And now it's 2025. 2026 is going to be a monumental year for so much in this country in soccer. And the fact that we'll have two soccer teams in the city is just a win-win. And I think Denver will absolutely step up. Hands down. No questions asked. I believe in that city.
10 years from now, Brennan, there'll be a 12-year-old who was playing at Rush as well, who'll be able to say, I'm standing on the shoulders of giants, and that giant was Jordan Angeli. Giant Jordan Angeli. Giant director of vibes, Jordan Angeli. So to your point as well, Brennan, I'm gonna choose joy. I'm gonna choose to, until I'm proven otherwise, I'm gonna choose to believe that This will be a compounding, a positive thing. This will be a force multiplier. We're going to choose joy. It's been a really rough week for me. I will not elaborate, listeners. So I'm going to choose the positive end on this front. Brendan, this is not Sox versus Cubs. This is Indiana Fever and Indiana Pacers. And it's just a matter of who's going to be the Caitlin Clark for Denver FC. You've been listening to Holding the High Line, Rapids Roommates, WOSO with Rabbi in Red with Brendan Plone. Check out our sponsor, Magic Mind. They've been absolutely fantastic partnering with us. They just launched their 24-hour pack so you can get really good anxiety relief and just real zen feeling in the morning when you wake up and you're starting your day and right before you're about to go to sleep, all packed into one. 45% off your first-time order as well. And they're donating a bunch of stuff to charity. Really big deal. January, difficult time in the world right now. National Mental Wellness Month. Let's focus on that. Although I will say, listeners, by the time you're listening to this, it's probably February 1st or February 2nd. But we're not going to choose on that and everything. Brendan, where can people follow you on the various social places?
I'm at brendan.plone and at Blue Sky. I'm still on that Bluebird app, Twitter. Let's be real. That's still where I get a lot of good clicks from. Let's see here. And yeah, I'm on Instagram. But you know, I'm boring. I don't post much. But yeah, also you can find me my work at burgundywave.com.
Listeners, rate, review, share, subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Merch is developing. Rapid specific merch, I should say, not NWSL Denver, though maybe we'll have to do that once our WOSO podcast gets launched. And so go to our Substack, get the annual membership to support that, and that will get you locked in for the merch before we do pre-orders for that. We will have some extras for some people who are stragglers on that front as for you as well. And we're obviously on all the socials. We are more and more on Burgundy Sky. So if you have not made the jump or if you're not doing it on both, we are finding more joy, more communication, just better. It's the version of Twitter that I wanted to believe Twitter was in the past and is no longer. So we're more so on that app as well. So check us out there. And another shout out for the Rapids Reddit community, I think continues to be the solid, most healthiest and up-to-date from a news standpoint one. So if you haven't jumped on that, I think Reddit's, there's some subreddits that are wonky and a little weird and maybe too much people who are in their parents' basement who should probably go touch some grass. That Rapids Reddit's touching some grass and playing on some grass pitches. Listeners, Mark and I will be back next week to talk Rapids-specific stuff. There's a lot of stuff with them that we did not get into tonight, so we'll talk about then. But go be happy. Go celebrate. Professional women's soccer is coming to the Mile High City.
Peace. Congrats, Denver. You earned it.